You're listening to the Bird Dog Babe Podcast with my mom, Courtney Bastion.
This episode is presented to you by Purina Pro Plan and Boss Shot Shells.
Dog training is a bit of a creative process, right? And it's like not quite always tangible, not always black and white. And so I like to be able to just have that like creative momentum of being able to like write things and visualize things a little bit with like actual paper. So what happened after I moved to the app last year is that I just found like I wasn't making any progress with my training, and I added a third dog to the house. So now I have all these like really different skills that I'm training. Like the service dog needs certain criteria. My obedience dog needs something else. The puppy needs something else. And I was just like, ugh, like I'm not documenting any of this stuff anymore because the app just didn't suit my needs. So after kind of like failing completely on the whole app thing, I just thought, you know what, like I just need to sit down and like make something that's going to work for me so I can like keep track of all my training, understand where I'm at, and also understand how it like relates back to like my overall vision for what I want for my dogs. So that's kind of when I sat down and created this little journal. And every time I talk to someone about it, they're like, oh, I would really love to be able to have something where I could document my training that actually works. So this is where I am with having produced this training journal.
One of the best perks to my job with Purina is meeting you, the listeners, and bird dog peeps in my travels around the U.S. This past weekend, I was in Indiana and had the opportunity to meet Jen Miller and Karen Cecil and watch their puppy win Best of Breed over specials from the puppy class and earned a 5-point major. And guess what that puppy's eating? Yep, you know it. Purina Pro Plan. The combination of good genetics, training, and nutrition. It's a winning combination. I didn't get the opportunity to shoot any Boss Shot Shells this past week in my travels, but after last week's episode with Hannah Leonard on Sporting Lead Free, I did receive some great feedback from those of you that are shooting Boss this year and loving it, in addition to several people asking more about Boss. Boss not only has the best on the market, but they're doing great things in the conservation space. So find out more about their ammo and order direct to consumer at BossShotShells.com. There are a whole lot of ladies shooting siren shotguns this season, and you know what that means. Yep, more birds in the bag, because you're shooting a shotgun that actually fits you. Be sure to join the Facebook group named Siren Owners Group to be one of the first to hear everything that's happening at Siren and to follow the adventures of fellow Siren shotgun owners in the field and on the clays. After several hunting trips the past few weeks, my truck needed a good cleaning. One of the reasons I chose Dakota 283 G3 kennels over other competitors was the fact that it has a built-in handle and weighs only 37 pounds. So I don't have to struggle to lift those kennels in and out of my truck. There are several well-built kennel brands that will also save your dog's lives in the chance of an accident, but I'm not about to use one that weighs 72 pounds that I can't easily get into my house or into a hotel during my travels. So head over to Dakota283.com and be sure to use promo code BIRDDOGBABE for 10% off. Okay, so I'm pretty stoked to share that the podcast has a new sponsor, OnX. I've been using OnX for years to help plan, scout, and navigate my adventures. Heck, even when I was a real estate agent, I used it to show my buyers property lines and surrounding parcels. So I was incredibly honored and grateful when OnX came to me with this opportunity. As with all of the sponsors and partners of this podcast, I have not only used all the products and services long before we partnered, but I've also paid full price for every single one of them. Integrity is a pretty big deal to me, and I promise to never promote something that I don't personally believe in, use, and know that you will benefit from it. OnX is a tool that I use on every single hunt. Go to onxmaps.com to learn more and get yourself the number one hunting GPS app today. My guest today is Tamara Champagne. Tamara has trained dogs for over 20 years for obedience, protection work, tracking, scent detection, IGP, confirmation, and service dogs. And 6 months ago, she got herself her first bird dog, a German short-haired pointer. Her commitment to allowing her dogs to do what they were bred to do has got her diving deep into the bird dog world. Tamara recently published Training with a Purpose Journal to help dog trainers and owners outline and follow their goals. All right, let's get after it. Welcome to the podcast, Tamara.
Thanks, Courtney. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited. This is our first time recording on video as well. So this will be a nice little perk to share with the members of Patreon that they can see the uncut version and be able to connect a little bit more, being able to see who we're talking to and actually getting to see some of the visuals and your passion in this. So
yeah.
I'm pretty excited about it. Thanks for doing this.
You betcha.
So tell us a little bit about who you are, what you do. You're coming to us from where in Canada?
Yeah, so I'm coming to you guys from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. So for those of you who aren't totally familiar with the geography of Canada, we are really dead north of Montana. I don't know whereabouts you are in Montana, but we're probably a few hours from the border, I would say.
Yeah, western Montana, like above Missoula. So
mm-hmm, yeah, perfect. Yeah, so we're not really that far, actually. And Calgary is really nice and close to the Rocky Mountains, so it's absolutely a beautiful city. We have great access to the border when it's open for us to travel. And yeah, it's a really fabulous place. There's lots of dog stuff going on here, so it's a really cool place to live for anyone who's involved in outdoor activities, dog training, hiking, skiing. We pretty much have everything.
Very cool. So yeah. You are a trainer. What is it that you occupy the majority of your time with?
Oof, yeah. So I think all things dogs would be like the basic summary. But I've been, I also have a full-time job, so I should say that. That is like predominantly where I spend most of my time. Unfortunately, that 40 hours a week gets used up. And I work in pipeline inspection in my full-time job. I'm a quality manager for a pipeline inspection company here in Canada. And so anyone who's not familiar with quality management, really that's like looking at like auditing, compliance, process improvement, stuff that sounds pretty boring, but if you're into like structure and control, then it's a good spot for you for sure. But in my spare time, when I'm not doing the 40-hour work week, I love spending time with my dogs. And it's definitely, I would say, more than just a hobby at this point. It's an absolute obsession. I'm totally into like all things related to dog training, behavior, everything from hosting trials to judging trials to training my own dogs. And recently I just picked up a part-time gig with one of the service dog organizations here, Aspen Service Dogs. And so I'm also one of their puppy program leaders. So yeah, I'm definitely quite involved in all of the things. But really my passion lies in training my own dogs. I don't do a lot of training for other people. I really just like training my own dogs and spending my time kind of doing the sports that we love. So right now that for me, that looks like mostly like obedience and scent detection. And of course, like maybe some hunt tests coming up with my new puppy. So that's kind of what we're all involved in right now.
So are hunt tests going to be brand new to you, or have you been doing that previously?
No, this is totally brand new. I got a short hair puppy this year, my COVID puppy. Everyone had to get one, right? Mm-hmm. So that'll be brand new to us. The short hair is also brand new to me. So it's kind of a new adventure that I'm really looking forward to. I've already met a ton of amazing people. The community seems amazing. I'm really looking forward to getting into that sport and kind of just learning all the things. I think right now at this point in the hunt test, I'm definitely in that situation where I don't know what I don't know. You know, like it's such a big world and there's so much going on that I need to learn. So I'm just kind of trying to be a sponge right now and take that all in.
Yeah. So is the breeder of your short hair involved in testing and hunting? Is that something that you purposely sought out in a breeder?
Yeah, it absolutely was. I had been looking at a short hair for a long time. I've had Dobermans now for probably about 20 years. And I love the breed. I will always probably have a Doberman. Like I'm not looking to replace that breed in my home. But they do have some health problems. Like I've been really fortunate that most of my Dobermans have lived into at least double digits, but that's actually not super common for the breed. And I also just wanted to try something new. Like I said, I've always done like obedience, or I did IGP with my Dobermans, which at the time was Schutzen, and gone through a few iterations of name changes over the years, tracking, those sorts of things. And so I just wanted to kind of try something new. And one thing that I love about dog training is just watching dogs do what they were bred to do. Like, I've never had a dog that I've done herding with, but that's one example. Like, I just love dogs working sheep. Like, I just think it's amazing to see their innate ability and just have them, like, kind of just do the thing that they were bred for and intended for. And so when I was looking for a new breed, I also wanted to find something that was, had that, like, innate working ability still involved in the lines. In Dobermans, of course, their purpose was originally personal protection. And so we don't really breed for that as much anymore. I think that that part of the Doberman is sort of going away a little bit. And I'm not involved in protection sports anymore. So that wasn't really something that I was really wanting to pursue. Some more of the bitey breeds, like the German Shepherds and the Malinois, like, I didn't want to go down that road because I knew I wasn't going to pursue that sport or that career for that dog. So I looked sort of towards the sporting dogs, and that's kind of how I started narrowing down my selection to a short hair. I think the biggest thing for me was looking for a breeder that did the health testing, that tested or at least titled their own dog so that they were, like, working in the same venues that I wanted to pursue. And I wanted to be able to do the things that my dog was intended to be doing. So that's kind of how I came upon the breeder that I found. And they're actually quite involved in NAVDA. They are, Charles Poulter is a NAVDA judge. And he's and his partner Annie are very involved in their chapters as well. And I think they have, I think for sure, one versatile champion, which is my puppy's mom, but I think that they have a couple on the way as well. So they're really, really busy with NAVDA. So to me, it was really important that they, like, kind of had that perspective. And they've also been a huge supporter for me already since we've gotten the puppy. So it's been really great to get involved with them.
That's awesome. Have you already joined your NAVDA chapter there and gone to any of the training days or anything?
Yeah. So the Prairie Vista NAVDA chapter is the one that's here local to me in Calgary. And I've been to a few training days with my new puppy. And I also volunteered at a couple of the tests that they had there this summer. My puppy wasn't ready. I wasn't ready, actually. I think my puppy was probably totally fine to do his NA this fall, but I wasn't ready. But it was a really good opportunity to volunteer at those tests and just meet the members and kind of get involved with the club and just watch, like, kind of what everything was all about. Like, it's so easy to read the, you know, the Ames book and try and, like, decipher in your mind, like, what those exercises really look like. But being able to see them is just, like, it really concretes everything for you, right? You can start putting that whole picture together for what your day would look like with your puppy.
Right. So, like, as a novice to this going in, like, what, when you got there, what was kind of the most overwhelming thing to you?
I don't know. Like, I think what a lot of people might find overwhelming was just going into that club environment and sort of trying to meet people and kind of figure out how to, like, place yourself kind of within the environment. But having been in Schützen for so many years, like, the club, the workings of the clubs and, like, the club days and the training days are very similar. So that part I kind of felt like was a bit old hat. Like, I was like, yeah, you show up to a training day, like, you're kind of there all day. You kind of help people work their dogs and observe things. And so that part was really good. But I think that the biggest part of it was just, like, not really knowing anything about, like, the bird work, right? Like some of it seems, like, really innate to me, like the tracking and the retrieving and the swimming and, like, you know, like, those are, like, behaviors that I, as a dog trainer, feel like I can train my dog in. But everything related to birds was just, like, so foreign to me. And, like, I just, like, how do I pick this thing up? And, like, what am I supposed to do with it? And, like, you know, I remember posting a video of, like, Vimy's first time on pigeons and traps. And I posted it on Facebook, and I left some of the like part in there where I was like, now I don't know what to do. Like, I'm saying on the video, like, I like, should I pop the trap? Like, what's going on? Like, I have no idea. Like, my puppy's on point, and, like, I just don't even know where to go from here. So, like, the whole thing was just so overwhelming, but, like, exciting, like, overwhelming in a good way. But I remember Charles responding to it, and he's like, yes, you should definitely pop the trap. You know, so it's like these things that you don't even think that you,
sure.
you just don't know anything about that, right?
Yeah. But I mean, I think your ability to probably, like, read dogs and understand training concepts in general is probably helping you come in a little bit more advanced than, you know, your average novice, don't you think?
Yeah, I think that that's definitely helpful for sure. Especially like I think I do a lot of scent detection right now with my dogs. And I think that that's very complementary to hunting, right? Like the dogs are using kind of the same innate natural ability to do the detection as they are the hunting, right? So early on, like I got my puppy just like hunting around the house for his toy and like just hunting for his breakfast and stuff like that. And that gives me the ability to kind of like recognize what my dog looks like when he's actually on odor and when he's actually hunting. And I think that like definitely the overwhelm isn't there that like some new people might have coming into it where like they see all of these things and they don't really understand how the whole picture goes together. Whereas I feel like at least my experience in past sports has helped me sort of break it down to understand like there's certain skills involved in each overall concept. And I at least feel comfortable training those overall skills. So I think there's still the magic of the experience where it comes to putting the whole concept together and being successful with that. But I'm definitely not feeling terribly overwhelmed, at least with like understanding the skills that are required.
Mm-hmm. And how old is your puppy now?
He's just 6 months.
6 months. Okay. Yeah. So you'll be testing him in next spring then.
Yeah. I already feel like a little bit nervous about the timeline of all of that because I think he would have been ready. Like I just missed our last test. It was in August and at that point, I was like, oh, he's just not really ready. Like, he hadn't really been pointing any birds. And I was a little bit nervous about the water. And then it was like almost 2 weeks after our last test, like everything came together. He was swimming and pointing birds. And I was like, darn, I should have just taken a chance and done it. But what I'm feeling now is a little bit of pressure just based on our weather. Like, you know what it's like in Montana, too. Like, our springs are late. Mm-hmm. And so he'll be kind of aging out probably by like midsummer, right? So I need to make sure that we're hitting an early test as much as possible.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully. Yeah. Cause I mean, we still sometimes have snow in April. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. And even in May, like, I don't know, the water is not very hospitable even by May long weekend. Like we have a holiday at the end of the month in May. And even that is like, often we get snow or ice or it's not great. So I would say June is probably the earliest we would target anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Will you do any hunting with him then, or have you given that a try, or is that something you're not quite ready to work on right now?
Oh yeah, I'm just all in. All in.
I love
it. So I knew getting into this that was something that I would want to provide for my puppy. I wasn't really sure that I wanted to go hunting, but I'm like, okay, well, you know, it's like having any other breed that's got a job to do. Like I'm a big proponent for providing that stimulation to your dogs. I don't think that dogs are intended to just be couch potatoes and hang out in the backyard. So I think that they need to do the job that they were bred for. So I knew that I would be taking that on, but I wasn't sure how I would feel about it or like how, you know, like I'm a city girl. I've never done any hunting. My family's not into it. Like I don't know anyone that really does it. So I was like, this is going to be a big leap. But you know what, I've taken that leap and I've made some really great connections at our chapter club. The people have been like incredibly welcoming and really amazing. So I actually went to my first pheasant festival a few weeks ago with Vimy. He was just like freshly 6 months old. And I went with a gentleman from the NAVDA club. He had a puppy a few months older than Vimy. And we went out and hunted some pheasants for the morning and it was freaking awesome. Like I had so much fun.
That's awesome. You're totally a bird dog addict now.
100%. Like that first morning, like sealed the deal. And I think had we not even like found any birds, I probably would have said the same thing, but the experience was just even so much better because both the puppies, he has got a drift puppy. I think she's about 9 months old. So those two just went out and they were all business. Like I thought, oh, these silly puppies are just going to like get out of the truck. They're going to be like running around and playing the whole time. Like we're basically going for a walk in the field. Right. But that was not at all what happened. Like they came out of the truck, they did play for a minute, but then they kind of got right down to work. And like within minutes, Vimy had already gone on point on his first pheasant.
That's so cool.
At that point, I was like so motivated. I'm like, we're going to go find all the birds. This is amazing.
That is so cool.
Yeah,
I love it.
I have a long ways to go before I'm actually like independently like solo hunting.
Sure.
I like I don't know anything about guns. I don't know anything about, like, actually anything. So right now I'm super gracious for anyone who's willing to take me out and give me some exposure and teach me the ropes. But the long-term plan is to be able to get to the point where I can be, you know, at least independent so I can take my own dog out when I want.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I love that you're not intimidated by it. You know, you're just like, I want to learn more. And you know that there's a little bit to tackle to become full on and go out there and hunt with your dog by yourself. But I mean, don't make it harder than it needs to be. Just if you can get yourself a gun that you feel comfortable with, you just get out there with your dog. Don't worry about too much else. And like, think so many times we bring up the barriers of, oh, I need the perfect clothes and I need the perfect gun and the perfect boots. And like, just get out there and do it. Just go have fun. Yeah. You're going to learn something each time of, oh, I think my hunt would be a little bit better if I could do this or have this, but not necessary.
Now, that's
not
a really good point too. Yeah. You don't need any of that fancy stuff. Like, I didn't even have like an orange anything when I first started at the club, and like, I slowly piece by piece got something, and a friend lent me one of those like sort of like, you know, like flimsy orange vests. And so I had that going out, and I got a hat, and you know what? So like, I'm already kind of like geared up to where I needed to be. And all, like you say, like all the rest of it will come with time and experience. Right.
Absolutely. Yeah. I carry two of those like flimsy orange vests in my truck and a hat, just in case I come across somebody that's like, I want to go too. So I can just throw the orange on them and all right, let's go.
Oh, that's a great idea, actually. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. It's handy. How long ago did you start training dogs?
So I've been training dogs probably for 20, like just over 20 years now. I got my first Doberman, like as soon as I moved out of the house. My parents were like, no Dobermans while you're living in this house. I don't know if they were like afraid of them or what the actual like reason for that rule was, but, as soon as I left, I got a Doberman. And my breeder said to me, hey, if you want this puppy, like he's a lovely puppy, but we expect that you show him and we expect that you put obedience titles on him. And that's kind of the criteria, as much like many of the Nobbler breeders that say we want, you know, at least a natural ability on this puppy. So I was like, sure, I have literally no idea what any of that means, but she was a really great mentor to me. And she kind of taught me the ropes of how to show my own dog and pointed me in the direction of people that could help me with obedience trainers. And the rest is history. Like, I think the first time I entered a dog show, I got like a ribbon and I was totally hooked. I was like, this is amazing. I love this.
So have you been showing all your dogs since then?
Yeah, I really show to support my breeder. It's not my thing. I don't really care for it. It's a lot of like hurry up and wait. You're just sitting around and, you know, you show your dog for a couple minutes and it's like a very subjective test of what your dog's all about. Like, that's one person's opinion that you're paying for that day. So I do it if my breeders request it. If they don't request it, I'm kicking my heels all the way to the field or the obedience ring or wherever else I'd rather be spending my time. But if my breeder wants me to do it, then I will absolutely show my own dogs. Mm-hmm.
So what brought you from going from like just training to the testing aspect of it and then like continuing to build on that?
I think there's probably a few things that kind of like got me hooked and then kept me going with it. I would say the big aspect, which I really didn't think, like, you know, I always consider myself like an introverted person and that I don't really need like all of these like social communities. But at the end of the day, I really think that that's what kind of keeps me going with the dog stuff, is that like we have these really great communities. We meet all of these amazing people that are like-minded, we share interests in all the same things, and we're all pushing towards the same thing. So it's kind of awesome to be able to share this community with people who also understand the highs and the lows of all of that, right? Because let's be realistic, not everything's a walk in the park when it comes to training dogs and competing. So I think that's kind of what got me like involved. Like early on, I took some puppy obedience classes with my very first Doberman, and I met who I'm still friends with, the instructor to this day. And I think that her encouragement to get involved and then kind of meeting that community and training with people was kind of what got me hooked on it. And I think like there's always that little taste of success when you go out and you do have like, you know, your dog like wins a class, or you come home with a ribbon because you did really well or whatever. I think that's kind of what got me hooked originally. I'm like a very competitive person by nature, and so I love to compete. But it's actually not what keeps me coming back, because if you only look at all of that as your measure of success, then like dog training can actually, and competing with your dog can be awfully unsuccessful, right? Like you're probably going to have a lot of bad days. And so I think what actually keeps me coming back now isn't the accolades or the ribbons or the wins. It's really just the experience of being out there with my dog and like training every single day and competing. Like you're building this bond that you would not have with your dog if you didn't do those things, right? Like you're learning how to work as a team. You're overcoming challenges together as a team, which is like really huge for establishing trust between the two of you. And to me, that's really what keeps me coming back to all this like dog competition and testing and all that kind of stuff.
How many dogs do you have right now?
So I have 2 personal dogs and I also have a foster. So I'm fostering a service dog in training right now for Aspen. And he's about 15 months old right now, and he'll probably be embarking on his like adult training journey here pretty shortly. So he'll be leaving us to go back to Aspen service dogs and complete that last little bit of training to get him over the finish line as a certified service dog. And then I have my 4-year-old Doberman, Valor. He is kind of like my main dog right now that I do obedience and scent detection with. And then I have my puppy Vimy, my 6-month-old short hair. And yeah, it's a pretty busy house right now with 2 puppies who are kind of like in that adolescent phase. So
right.
Valor's
right.
The only one that has any sanity at the moment.
Are you training every day?
You know, I train probably every single day, but I don't train every dog every day.
Okay.
So I think dogs need downtime, just like we need downtime. Like if you were training for some, you know, like let's say you were studying for school or you were training for a marathon, like, you know, you're going to get exhausted if you're training every single day, right? So I like to train. So like having a multiple dog hold for me is awesome because I'm not wearing down one dog. I'm not overworking them. But I try to give all my dogs a day off. And that day off looks like mostly just like free time, have some free chews, have like lots of like free running time, like lots of off leash time, relaxing time, that sort of stuff. And then besides that, I probably train each dog probably like for sure 5 days a week, I would say.
Okay. So you've started a business, canine development, testing and training.
Yeah. Just canine development and testing.
And testing. Okay. Explain to the listeners a little bit about what that's about.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is, it's kind of come out of, so all these years, I have to preface this by saying that like I've been involved in dogs for 20 years and I've never bred a litter. I've never had the desire to breed a litter. I've like more or less kept my dogs intact, but just didn't really have the desire to do it or didn't think that they were really good breed representatives to breed them. So that's just never something that's crossed my plate. And frankly, it kind of takes away time from my training, and that's really what I'm passionate about. But I have not ever overlooked the amount of work that goes into the dogs that are being produced for my purpose, right? I realize that breeders are sacrificing so much of their time, their money, their own training time, their own dogs to be able to make sure that people like me have dogs that we can do sports with or that we can continue on testing and doing things with. So I've always wanted to be able to support them, but I don't want to breed. So I'm like, oh, how do I, you know, stay engaged with my breeder friends and support them through what they're going through without actually getting into breeding myself. And so like just knowing so many breeders over the years, all of these like little needs were emerging. And so I found myself kind of just like helping them here or helping them there. I was doing little things like I would temperament test a litter of puppies for them, or, you know, things would come up. We would brainstorm ideas for like chimen equipment for the puppies. And so that's kind of how canine development and testing sort of became. Was really just through the idea of like, I wanted to support these people who were putting so much work into our purebred dogs to give me what I need for my dogs. And I like absolutely know the amount of work that goes into producing a litter and raising them and socializing them and feeding them and, you know, evaluating them to make sure that they go into the right home. So I want to be able to support that process.
I love it. And kind of what you've just recently developed with all this is training with a purpose journal.
Yeah.
So I'm super stoked about it. I had a chance to look at it over the weekend and I think it's such a great concept. Tell us a little bit about what that is.
sure. So it kind of diverts a little bit from like the original idea of supporting breeders. But what, again, like in conversation with all of these breeders and people who I train with, people were basically saying like, I want to train my dog to do this thing, this sport, whatever. But I feel like overwhelmed, or like, I don't know where to start, or I feel like I have too much on my plate. So I'm never really like making any progress. And like, I'm a like compulsive, organized, like I document everything. I'm always journaling things. And I track all of my training more or less, with either like a notebook or an app or whatever. And so I know that there's a lot of value in being able to kind of like journal or like plan, like kind of what your goals are, and then kind of trying to create training sessions that help you align to that, right? It's so easy in this like digital world now to like be overwhelmed or compare yourself to other people, right? Like you see social media and there's all these amazing dog trainers. There's amazing dog trainers everywhere, you know, and they're training their dogs to do all of these awesome things. And it's easy as like someone who maybe doesn't feel that they're an amazing dog trainer or doesn't have the experience or the resources to feel like they're not as much as those other people, or they're not making progress. And so I wanted to be able to share all of my experience in sort of training or planning my training with other people. And that's kind of how this whole journal idea was born. I have spent like, I don't know how much time and money and resources on like trying to find like the perfect like app or like the perfect notebook. And they pretty much don't exist as far as I can tell, because none of them have been made for dog training. I finally like switched all of my notes over to like this like app like last year. And that was kind of the final straw for me when I was like, I spent all this time like transferring all of my notes over and making my training plans on this app, which was supposed to like increase my productivity and my efficiency and all these things. And it just didn't work. Like I didn't feel, dog training is a bit of a creative process, right? And it's like not quite always tangible, not always black and white. And so I like to be able to just have that like creative momentum of being able to like write things and visualize things a little bit with like actual paper. So what happened after I moved to the app last year is that I just found like I wasn't making any progress with my training. And I added a third dog to the house. So now I have all these like really different skills that I'm training. Like the service dog needs certain criteria. My obedience dog needs something else. The puppy needs something else. And I was just like, ugh, like I'm not documenting any of this stuff anymore because the app just didn't suit my needs. So after kind of like failing completely on the whole app thing, I just thought, you know what? Like I just need to sit down and like make something that's going to work for me so I can like keep track of all my training, understand where I'm at, and also understand how it like relates back to like my overall vision for what I want for my dogs. So that's kind of when I sat down and created this little journal. And every time I talk to someone about it, they're like, oh, I would really love to be able to have something where I could document my training that actually works. So this is where I am with having produced this training journal.
Yeah, it's perfect. And I can totally relate with like digital concept, you know, whether like I just want to make a grocery list or put something in notes, it just isn't as fluid. And
yeah.
You know, I'll always catch myself. I mean, I have like 7 different notebooks and then I have them titled of different topics. And then I write notes down in the notebooks, but it gets to be a mishmash. But I'm also a person that prefers reading magazines, reading books, having them right in front of me rather than going to them digitally. It's just easier to refer to it. I love your concept that it's so specific to dog training. That's not just writing it down in a spiral bound notebook, that it can get very specific. What are some of the main steps that you have in the journal?
So I kind of have set it up kind of in 4 steps, but I guess I should say that like the idea of the journal was never that it was supposed to be linear steps. Excuse me. It really should be like cyclical. So I have the steps set up as dream, plan, train, and succeed. And each part of the journal kind of walks you through the process of what those steps are. So just for example, like under dream, you really just are doing a brainstorming activity where you think of like all the like just absolutely crazy things that you would love to achieve that are not necessarily goals yet. Like dreams aren't really specific, right? I mean, they can be specific, but they can also be like really huge and scary and things that like you might think are almost just a little bit unattainable, right? Like for example, like one of the things that I have now in my training with Purpose Journal is my dream for Vimy, at least, is for us to be able to do solo hunting. Like that's going to take a long time to get there and not without like overcoming some significant like training hurdles and things on my end where I need to learn and grow. So to me, like that's a really long-term vision. But it's something that I want to do with my dog. And so I've kind of put that in there as something to work towards. But without having those dreams, it's really hard to kind of stay focused on something, right? Like, and this is kind of where I was going when I was saying like, you know, this whole world of like watching people train and you can take all these online courses now and you can divide your attention among like thousands of little things that are maybe not necessarily like contributing to where your vision is for your own dog, right? And so I think having those dreams and like actually writing them down helps to kind of keep you centered on what it is that you're working towards with your dog, and you're not getting distracted by all of these other things that pop up, because inevitably they do.
Mm-hmm. How often are you seeing yourself visiting that journal to write down new dreams or goals and looking at what happened previously or how you can improve on that maybe next week or tomorrow?
Yeah. So the, like the dream part of it, like, and I have to go back and say that, like, you know, there's lots of space in here for you to write down your dreams, but you don't need to fill out all the spaces. You might only just have one thing right now. That's totally fine. Like nobody's judging your dreams, or at least they shouldn't be. And so like Vimy's little like dream page, it's not completely filled out yet. Like, I don't know where we're going, but like I have a couple things in there. Right. So really the dream part of it, like I kind of revisit that just as often as things come up. And since our last hunting trip, that was one of the things that I added to my journal, was that I want to be able to get that to that point with my own dog. But from the training part of it, or like, let me actually just visit the planning part of it first. So from the dream part, you have all these like crazy wild things that you want to be able to do, but you need to set some goals around how you're going to get there, right? Like one of my like big dreams for Valor, my Doberman, is that I want to take an all breed high end trial. Like that's like one of the big coveted wins in all breed obedience, right? Specialty is one thing where you're only just competing against your own breed, but when you're competing against all the breeds and you have all these like amazing dogs and competitors on that level, like to me, that is like one of the like big, big things in obedience. And I want to get there with him. So when I look at that dream, that's like that huge thing that like might seem like totally unattainable at this point, because it's like, well, how are we ever going to get there? But what I've done in the journal is I've distilled those into goals. So I've said like, what are the key pieces that I need to work on with this dog specifically at this point in his training to get me to that vision? So like one of those things is to make sure that he has like perfect fronts and finishes. So like in obedience, the dog has to retrieve or recall to the handler in front position. And then they also, what they say is finishing. So that's how the dog has to get into heel position. But in competitive obedience, you're losing half to 1 point, maybe even 2 points. I had a trial where we lost 2 points on a finish. Like when you're talking about like little minuscule point deductions and you're losing points on every single front and finish, and there's maybe like 8 to 10 in each obedience routine, that's a significant number of points. So for me, my goal this whole next year is just to work on those and just eliminate as many of those point deductions as I can, just through good training and just like crisp mechanics and like getting him really clear on where his criteria is for those behaviors. Because to dogs, those things are kind of pretty gray, right? They're like, I don't know, is this straight? Is that straight? So that's like my goal. And I set those up as SMART goals. So I think it's really important to make sure that like when you're setting goals, that it's specific, measurable, attainable, relevant. So that means relevant to like what you want to accomplish, and that you have like some sort of like time bound, idea of when you want to accomplish that, right? So for him, I made it very specific. I said, I want to specifically work on his fronts and finishes. I want to measure that by losing X number of points or less than X number of points in each obedience routine. it's attainable by, and then I write down all the things that are going to help me attain that goal. So like, what do I need to do? What are the things that I'm going to put in place? Maybe I need to seek out some extra support or coaching. Like that's the attainable part of your SMART goal. And then relevant, like how does it relate back to your dream, right? So if that isn't relevant somehow, then like, should I be chasing it? You know, like that's kind of where it helps you focus your time a little bit, right? And then the time bound part of it is like, you know what, goals are obviously meant to be in flux sometimes, but you need to give yourself at least like an initial time frame for when you want to get that done by. And hey, if it changes or if it's in flux or whatever, not a big deal, but have that time bound goal so that you can start putting steps in place to work towards it over a period of time. But once I get those goals in place, then basically I'm really focusing on like the day-to-day part of it is really the day-to-day training and the skills that are required to get me to those goals. And so that's the part that I'm actually revisiting on a pretty regular basis. So I set the dreams, I set the goal. That's kind of like the planning part of it's all done now. And then I'm actually just getting into the nitty-gritty details of training my dog every single day. And that's the train part of the journal. And so each day is just broken down by skills. So I think that's really important to have a skill-based plan instead of a conceptual plan. It's really easy to say, hey, I want to work on this picture with my dog, but without breaking it down into little skills, it's going to be really hard to not only measure your success or measure your progress, but also it's not going to be as easy for your dog to learn them either, right? So the journal is broken down so that you can work on very specific skills every single day that are relevant to your goals. And then that part of it, I kind of review kind of just on the fly. Like I might not always journal everything every single day because life gets in the way, it happens, right? Like you just forget or you got busy or like whatever the case may be, you just kind of like fall off the bus for a while on your journaling. But the nice part of the journal for me, and this is again where like some of these like notebooks and planners just weren't working for me, is that they were all dated. So the journal isn't dated. You can take sheets out. Heck, it's a 3-ring binder. Like throw the sheet out if you're not happy with it or add a new one if you need to replace something. And if you didn't journal for a few days or a week or a month or whatever, that's not a big deal either because it's not dated. You add the dates as you're going through your each like day training plan. And you can revisit those as often as possible, but as often as is also realistic for you, right? Mm-hmm. Not everyone may have the time to do it on a daily basis. I try to plan out like at least a couple sessions at a time, but I don't go too far beyond that because a big part of this journaling process is really understanding like where that training session ended and looking at that, reviewing it kind of to your point, like how often am I reviewing it after every training session, at least in my mind. And I'll try and make a point of going to write down what happened, like what went really well, what might need some work. Like maybe the training session like just went off the rails and it did not go how I wanted it at all. I might make a note of that and just like simmer on it for a little while until I come back to my next training session and make a new plan for how I want to approach something again. Mm-hmm. So that like whole like planning my skills out for each training session and then reviewing them is happening on a pretty regular basis. Mm-hmm. And it even happens like after trials. Like I was at a trial this weekend with Valor, a scent detection trial. And like our day just did not go the way I had hoped it did yesterday. And already like all the way on the drive home last night, I'm thinking about all the things that I want to put in place for my training or things that I might tweak differently. And some of the notes I want to just make on the trial itself, like that are going to give me those reminders in my training of like where I'm going with it. So I came home last night and wrote that down in my journal, just kind of like under the notes section, just saying like, hey, like pay attention to this. This didn't really work very well. Like maybe consider a training plan for this problem in the future. Mm-hmm. So it's not necessarily that I'm making a big plan every single time I sit down. It's just like these little like thoughts and sort of feelings about how things went sometimes is what I'm documenting.
Yeah. I see how this is going to be super helpful for those of us that are training multiple dogs at a time as well. You know, you take 3 natural ability dogs to a test and then they each have a completely different outcome and you have different goals to set for each of them moving forward. So like in the utility test, like let's say one of my goals is to have a utility prize on a dog, knowing that there's different areas of the utility test, how specific would you recommend you put a goal? Like if I say I want my dog to be able to heal through the stakes without touching me or without spinning in a circle or without losing focus on what it's doing because it knows that ducks are straight ahead. You know, how specific are you suggesting that we get into that?
Yeah, I would think very specific, as specific as possible, mm-hmm. For that goal. So you might say like, I want a prize one in utility. Like, let's just say you make it like a more generic goal, but then you're going to say, okay, how am I going to get there? So you might make some sub goals around that. Or if you want to make just that healing portion of it your goal, then I would make it really specific. Like you say, like, I want no tight leash. I want my dog's focus in this place. I don't want to have to give any extra commands. I like whatever that criteria looks like for you. I would write that in my goal under the specific part. Mm-hmm. And so in my journal, like the journal itself has just like a spot for the goal name or the title, and then just an empty box underneath. But for myself, I do write out the SMART acronym so that I can put like, what is the specific criteria that I'm looking for here, right? Like that helps me kind of get it clear in my mind about exactly what I'm looking for. Because then when you go to your training skills, that's going to be where you start breaking down that goal. So you say, okay, well, what do I have to do to make sure that my dog never has a tight leash? Or what do I need to do to make sure that my dog's always on the same side of the pylons as I am? Like, so then you're going to start working a plan for those skills to make sure that you're developing them as needed.
Break down the SMART acronym.
So specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, and time bound.
And you have that in the journal for every, on every goal page?
I do. So at the top of just the generic goal page, at the beginning, you'll see that I have that written down, and it kind of gives you a bit of a description as to like some of the things that you might want to consider when you're looking at each one of those criteria. And then I just give you like a blank goal box to write that in. So I left it sort of generic for a reason, because not everyone's going to want to have that like specific mm-hmm. criteria in their goal page. But for me, I like the clarity of that. So I just write down like S, and then I put what my specific criteria is around that. Measurable, like how are you going to measure your healing? Like, I think that's something that I think people really struggle with, the measurable part of the SMART goal. Like for you, would that be like a particular score then on your healing? Like that could be measurable, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So you kind of just need to get clear in your mind of like how you're going to measure your actual goal progress.
Mm-hmm. And then attainable.
Attainable. So how I look at it is like, how is it attainable, or how will you attain it? So like, what are some of the things that you need to do to get there? Like, it's absolutely attainable, because like we can train dogs to do like amazing things, right? So we can absolutely teach them how to get through this healing course, but like, what are you going to have to do to make sure that you get there? So maybe it's that you need to increase the frequency of your training on healing specifically. It might be that you're going to seek out a coach or a mentor to help you with that. It might be that you're going to go to another like aims and rules clinic to like get clear on like what the criteria is. Like, there could be so many things that you could put under attainable, but really I look at that as like, how is this going to be attainable for me, and what sort of things do I need to do to get there?
And then what's our next one?
Relevant.
Relevance.
Yeah. Relevant. So how is this goal, the overall goal of having nice healing, or having a prize one healing, or however you want to write the goal out for yourself, how is that relevant to your overall dreams?
Okay. Yeah. And then the last one.
So time bound or timely, some people call it that. But basically, like, when do you want to achieve that by? Like, what's your due date, basically?
Okay.
Yeah, because if we don't put like a timeline around our goals, then you can kind of like let them slip out forever, right? I mean, we get busy, we get distracted by things, and before you know it, you're like, oh my God, it's like 2 weeks before my test, and like I totally didn't work on any of my healing. You know, right. So, and like, we've all been victim to that, like in any sport, right? Like you get, you're like, oh no, it's like mad crunch time.
It's good to have a due date on there. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what I really love that you have in there, which I think is something that we overlook too often, is celebrating that goal.
Yeah. And yeah, absolutely.
I mean, don't you think? Because it's something that we just overlook. We're like, okay, oh, I got a prize one. That's great. Yay. But like, what do you do? What do you personally do when you hit one of those goals? I mean, it's always nice to like have this and have that check mark of did it, done, but like, what's something that you personally do?
You know, lots of things. I think that like, I'm actually like very motivated by like the perpetual success. Like I'm a complete junkie. So I think like, honestly, like I just keep going and I'm like a very driven minded person that way. It was actually a good friend of mine. She reviewed the journal before I released it. And it was a very last minute addition actually into the journal. So I'm glad that you like it.
Yeah.
But she was the one that actually gave me that idea, because not everyone is that intrinsically motivated, right? Like sometimes you do need a little bit of a carrot. But for me, I try to like focus on non-training things that are rewarding, right? So like I might go explore a new trail with my dog that I haven't been making time to do because I've been super crunched trying to train three dogs for three different sports or three different venues. So I might just like put that time aside and say, you know what, like Sunday morning, like if we get to this goal, then I'm going to go like explore that new trail that I really wanted to get to. It has nothing to do with dog training. It's going to be super rewarding for me and my dogs. Yeah, like, so there's lots of different things. Let me just look in my book right now and see, because I did just plan out this month's training and I had some goals in there and I was like, well, I'm going to use this like little reward setting thing because I like that idea.
Yeah.
Oh, one thing that I had was just to like share a video like progress update as a bit of a reward, right? So like you can kind of like have that camaraderie from your like dog training circle, right? To say like, hey, like look what I accomplished this month, guys. Like it doesn't necessarily need to be that I'm gonna like get my high end trial this month. Like the goal setting process can be more than just achievement or like a status, right? And I think that's actually a really good point about the monthly overview, is that I try to provide a spot for you to look at things that are not just like your overall goals. Like how can you actually work through these things without achieving something, right? Like too often we want to just check the box, but like really in dog training, that's not how the real world works, right? Like there's often a lot of stumbling and kind of rejigging the plan before you are successful. So one thing that I really like to use, and this was taught to me by my old triathlon coach, was the idea of process goals. Do you know what a process goal is?
No.
Okay. So the way that she explained it to me was to have something that wasn't just like outcome based, right? Like getting your utility prize one is very outcome based goal. But a process goal is more about like some of the little things that you can do on your journey towards that goal that are still going to contribute towards the success or to like the attainment of that goal, but that you can still check off and feel good about even if you don't get to that utility prize one.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, and I think we know like all too well the disappointment of like hanging this like huge goal over our heads and saying like, this is what I'm doing, and like living only for that goal, and then like being kind of disappointed or let down if it doesn't happen. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea of having these process goals is to give yourself a little bit of motivation to continue working towards things, but also be able to celebrate the small successes when they happen and not be disappointed if there is, you know, for some reason you don't hit that goal as planned. The last part of it is just kind of like the overview at the end. So you can use that part of the journal however you want, but it kind of goes back to your question you asked earlier about like the review process, right? So you should be reviewing kind of like every few sessions and kind of like implementing strategies if things aren't going well and making changes on the fly. But it's always nice to like take a big step back and look at what's kind of happened over that last year, right? So I have kind of just a little section at the back that's kind of just like your yearly overview, that it has a place to write down the goals that you originally set for yourself and some areas to note how it's been going. Like, did you achieve those goals? What's worked? What hasn't worked? And if you haven't achieved those goals yet, because they might be really long-term goals, then like, what's your progress? Like, what progress have you made towards that? So I think that that's a nice kind of way to do an annual review and just see where you're at, what's working, what needs to be changed, and then kind of go forward with that process again. And that's where like kind of the cyclical part of this planning all comes in.
Okay. Tell us how we can get this journal, Training with a Purpose.
Yeah, you can, probably the easiest way is just to find me on my website. So it's caninedevelopmentandtesting.com. And there, my email's there and my social media links and stuff are there. So that's probably the easiest way to find me or the journal itself.
Okay. And you're on Instagram and Facebook?
Yeah, Instagram and Facebook. Okay. And my CDT Instagram page is separate from my personal page. So if anyone wants just like cute dog pictures and dog training videos, then they can reach me at sport.canines on Instagram.
Very cool. And can you tell us, what's the price of the journals? I know you have an online option and then they can also get the hard copy as well.
Yeah. So I made the hard copy available just as a downloadable file. That's $9.99. It's nice and simple. It prints off as an 8.5 by 11 page, and you can either print it black and white or color, whatever your preference is. And that gives you tons of flexibility to add, because really the pages that you're going to want to add frequently are like your monthly and daily training logs. So that gives you lots of flexibility to print as many or as few as you want at a time. The other option is the hard copy, as you mentioned. That's $29.99. This is in Canadian dollars. Lucky for all the American residents, for sure. and that is in a little bit of a smaller version. So it's in 5x5x8.5, I believe the page size is. So it's quite like, it's like a nice little package that you can like slip into a training bag or like just easily take with you. It doesn't take up your whole desk when you're, you know, sitting here trying to write in it. So that's what the hard copy version is. There's a little bit of shipping, of course, required with the hard copy version. But yeah, we can get that out to anyone who needs it. So.
Very cool. And you just dropped this last week, right?
Yeah, just last week this went live, and it's been kind of like crazy to get it all figured out, because it's like totally not in my wheelhouse. Like I only just made it available based on a whim, because people were like, oh, that'd be really nice to have access to something like that.
Yeah.
But then, you know, these things take legs quickly. And before you know it, you're like down the rabbit hole of like, how do I print this? And like, where do I set up the bleeds for this? Or like, who is going to print this? And like, where do I find binders this size? And so it's kind of been this whole thing, but it's been fun. It's always a nice distraction to other everyday life stuff.
Yeah. And if we're interested in some of your other services you offer, Tamara, through canine development and testing. So you have temperament testing, cognition testing, and then you also have the enrichment equipment for sale, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So the equipment we can ship anywhere. It comes disassembled and we just send you instructions on how to put it together. And that puppy package is a little wobble board, a teeter totter, and a dog walk, all puppy sized. So it's really nice to be able to just have some equipment that you can put into your puppy whelping box as the puppies get kind of that 3 to 4 weeks of age and older. Mm-hmm. And that, again, was kind of born out of the idea that like a lot of my breeder friends were looking for this kind of stuff, but it really wasn't available. But we've actually been shipping it all over North America now. So it's been actually a really exciting addition to CDT. And so that's available on our website. And then the temperament testing and the cognition testing, it's a pretty local service because I have to be on site for that. So I'm mostly doing that for people kind of in the Alberta area. But there's lots of resources online for temperament testing or cognition testing if anyone wants to learn about it. So if anyone wants more information on it and how to find resources in their own area, certainly just touch base with me and I can try and put them in touch with people.
Yeah. So when you're, you know, besides doing those evaluations, I mean, is there anything that you can recommend that breeders do to help with that, to help have puppies? And I know this could be a whole can of worms, right?
Yeah.
Like we could do another probably 3 hours on this topic, but like maybe just generally what we can do to have smarter puppies, to have more well-rounded socialized puppies. Like, have you noticed something over the years of specifics of like your top tips?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, the biggest thing and the easiest thing for breeders to do is to provide that novel stimulation for puppies kind of from that 3 week to 8 week period when they're with the breeder. So that can look like the puppy agility or enrichment equipment. It can look like those like puppy adventure boxes that are really popular now, like those PVC frames with like the little like paintbrushes and rollers and things that are hanging from it. Really just anything simple. Like I think that, again, people get like so like caught up in the idea that it has to be like this big thing, but it doesn't. Like any little enrichment that you can give your puppies every single day to new sights and sounds is perfect. And that'll really go a long way to socializing puppies into kind of what we're looking for when they go home at 8 weeks, right? We just want like bold, confident, happy social puppies, and giving them that novel stimulus in their environment every day, piece by piece, without overwhelming them is really the best way to do it.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. Well, I'm really excited to keep following your journey with your first bird dog here and seeing you become, you know, your growth in becoming a hunter and with all the cool things that you're going to do with Vinny.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm really excited. I'm really looking forward to kind of getting into it and learning more. And just enjoying the process with my puppy, right? Because it's only all new once. So once you know all the things that are coming at you, then sometimes you can worry about things. But for right now, I'm just taking it as a new adventure and looking forward to it.
Yeah. Did you get to eat any of the pheasant that you guys had?
Yeah, we sure did. Yeah, I was awfully worried about it. I remember like messaging Mary, the wife of the gentleman that I went hunting with. They were also at the same pheasant festival, but they hunted in a different group. And I remember like Ron sent me home with these three birds. And I'm like, oh, God, what am I going to do with these things? Like, I have to watch a YouTube video on this. Yeah. And for the record, I didn't. My husband did. And I'm like, here, you need to deal with these things. But I remember messaging Mary when I got home because he was questioning me about like, are you sure we're supposed to eat these things? I'm like, yeah, I think so. But I messaged her and she laughed. She laughed at me. She's like, yes, you can absolutely eat them. Like, it's all good. Like, enjoy. They'll be delicious. And she was right. They were delicious. We had
How did you prepare them?
I looked for like something with a sauce because I was a little bit concerned. So I'm like, oh, I'm going to have to like hide this meat in something because it's might not be very good. What if it's awful? Anyway, it didn't really even need a sauce, but I just did like a little like mushroom sauce with like some veggies and stuff on the side. And it was wonderful.
That is so cool.
It was really good.
I'm going to need some more of these in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. I will definitely need that.
And it's such like a, you know, another step in being a hunter as well, is just, you know, having that ability to have the complete, you know, from the bird dog to the hunting and being able to put food on the table. And then, man, I just like with how detailed you are with stuff, I bet you're going to start like doing really cool things with your birds.
Thank you very much. Yeah. I think it's all part of the process for sure.
It is.
If I'm going to embrace this thing, then it's got to be like the whole thing. Like I can't let the birds go to waste afterwards. So if it's going to be part of it, then I'm just going to embrace the whole lifestyle and go with it.
I totally love it. So tell us one more time, Tamara, the website we can find you on and social media handles.
You betcha. So it's caninedevelopmentandtesting.com. And if you want anything business related, all of my contact information, email, Instagram, Facebook is all on the website. And just for like cute dog photos and training videos, you can find me at sport.canines. So spelled out C-A-N-I-N-E-S. And that's on Instagram.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, Courtney.
You've just finished another episode of the Bird Dog Babe podcast. Now go check out Tamara's website and order yourself Training with Purpose Journal. I've already started writing down some goals for my crazy cocker puppy Midge so that I can follow that timeline and have her on par to be on my A-team for next season. If you're interested in the uncut video of this episode, more discounts, giveaways, and content, sign up to be a Patreon member for $5 per month at patreon.com/thebirddogbabe. Check out the sponsors and partners of this podcast for all of your bird dog and hunting needs. Purina Pro Plan, Boss Shot Shells, Onyx Maps, Siren Shotguns, and Dakota 283 Kennels. And please support the conservation organizations of the birds you're chasing after this season and the public lands in which you hunt.